for joining us. We're going to get started here. I'll give you a quick heads up. We're going to do either 1 or 2 hours, just depends on the call volume. Right now, it's a little light. Calls are starting to come in and questions are piling up, but you still have time to get through. So if you've got, the first hour will be Destination Health. Second hour will carry over. And we'll also take some general questions if we have them. So start lining up your questions, comments, topics, anything you've got. Go ahead and press 1 on your phone, and we'll get to you. Let's go ahead and get started.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs,
back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. We take your calls and answer your questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, taxes, technology, anything else about trucking, especially today, being Destination Health. We take your calls and answer your questions about everything health. We've been lied to and it's killing us. Kim and I are here to help you break through to the truth and reach your health destiny. I'm a nutritional therapy practitioner. Kim is a nutritional therapy consultant in training and an Ironman triathlete, and we believe that the key to a long, healthy, vibrant life starts with a properly prepared, nutrient-dense, whole food diet. So let's get to the show and get to some of your calls and questions today. So, Kim, welcome. So great to be here.
Hi.
Again.
It is good to be here, Kevin. Thank you.
Yeah, and you sent me a pretty cool definition of health this morning. I love that. Why don't you tell us what that is?
Yeah, let me go back and find it. Yeah, we should know this by heart because we all should be doing this.
I know.
Right. Yeah, yeah. It's just so well-rounded. A state of complete mental, social, and physical well-being where all bodily systems, your nervous, hormonal, immune, digestion, function in harmony. They all work together.
Yeah, the way it is designed. You know, and one of the things I think about, you know, we talk about eating real whole food. We talk about, you know, maybe a high-fat diet. And, you know, people call and say, you know, I lost all this weight. I wasn't hungry. My joint pain went away. My digestive issues are better. They just go on and on and on. And some people think, oh, come on, it can't be that good. You know, we've all been told so many times, if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. And, you know, we've been told there are no miracle cures and one thing can't fix all these different problems. But I think people are just looking at this the wrong way. You know, the one thing I like to remind people is that we lived healthy for a long, long time. However long you believe we've been on this planet, humans didn't have disease. There was no diabetes 1,000 years ago. I mean, these things just didn't exist. We were just healthy. Everything worked the way you just described. You know, all of our systems worked. We were healthy, vibrant. Everything worked in harmony in our body. It really is a beautiful system. But civilization was such a major change. You know, bodies change, and, you know, over time, long, long periods of time, we might adapt to different things. But, you know, civilization is just like a blink of an eye in evolutionary time. One of the coolest examples I saw of this, I think it was on the movie The Perfect Human Diet. And they did this graphic illustration. They took a football field, and they were out on the football field, and they said, okay, this football field, this 100 yards, is the amount of time that humans have been on the planet. You know, based on geological data and historical data, this is how long We believe humans have been on the planet. And they would start to walk off so many yards and say, you know, at this point, humans discovered fire. And they went through the whole timeline. And they come down to the point where we started eating industrialized food. So, you know, industrialized animals, animals raised in factory farms and factory-made food and processed food. And it was only like inches at the end of this 100 yards. I mean, we weren't even a foot. It wasn't even the last foot. It was just inches. So this, you know, our modern way of eating is really, really new. And we're not doing well with it. I mean, it's obvious. You just look around. People are overweight. They're sick. They're on all kinds of medications. But it wasn't like that. I mean, our bodies worked the way they were supposed to work for a very, very long time without drugs, without doctors, without surgeries, without health insurance. You know, we didn't have all those things and we were healthy. So one of the things you and I talk about a lot here is going back, and because there's so much conflicting evidence, one research group will say this and one report says this and they conflict and what's really true. And the only way I know to kind of solve that dilemma is to go back and say, what was natural? What did we do for all those years when we were healthy? And what are we doing different now? And, you know, most of it is food, but it's lifestyle. We've talked to, you know, about getting outside, getting more sunshine, walking around in bare feet, because that's how we lived. We lived outside. We lived in contact with the earth. And you think about it, there are people now who, I'll bet they go weeks without having any mm-hmm. real contact with the earth. And that's just bizarre. And we spend, you know, multiple hours a week just sitting. That's not a natural thing to do. And then we try to make up for it with very structured, repetitive motion exercise. Now, I'd rather see somebody doing that than not exercising at all. But the other thing we're learning now is what we need is just a lot more natural movement. You know, walking on a treadmill for, you know, an hour, it's good. I'd rather see that than not moving, but that's not necessarily a natural movement. You know, it's getting outside and walking in bare feet when you can, there's your feet contacting the ground and, you know, the electrons, and there's all kinds of reasons to do that. So, you know, our focus here on this show is getting back to the way we lived naturally for many, many, many years, whatever you believe in. But that's kind of the paleo approach. We also talk about the ketogenic diet a lot. And I read an interesting article this morning on the ketogenic diet. You and I have talked about Dominic D'Agostino.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, really, really interesting guy. So he was a researcher. He is a researcher down in South Florida. And he started working with Navy divers and pretty extreme Navy divers like SEAL team and people who spent a lot of time underwater in extreme conditions. And one of the problems with that is they develop some sort of toxicity from the oxygen that they have to use. And over time, many of them started having seizures and they didn't know what to do with this. And that's what his research was. And he went back through, you know, older medical research and he found out that in the 1920s and 30s, the treatment for seizures was a ketogenic diet. This is nothing new. They were using this in the mm-hmm. early 1900s to treat seizures. And the only reason they stopped was because in the 1940s, somebody developed a seizure drug. And even though the diet worked really, really well, we were still in that mindset. Many people are still in this mindset today that why would you struggle to eat a different way to solve your problem when you can just take a pill? And that's been our mentality for a long time mm-hmm. now. We look to drugs. Why? why make your life harder, or why have to give up something that you love? And instead, why not just take the pill and fix the problem? But there's a big difference. Drugs only cover up symptoms, and the diet was actually fixing the problem. But, you know, here we are now 80 years later and just barely starting to get back to the idea that maybe this diet really can fix a lot of things. And he started using it with these Navy divers, and he eliminated their seizures. I mean, it was pretty amazing. So
incredible.
He got interested, in the ketogenic diet itself and how it affects cancer and all kinds of other issues. But he's also a power lifter. He's a big, strong guy. And he's done some amazing things just to show how well the body performs on ketones with no carbohydrates, because he's done some pretty interesting things while being on a long fast. So, for example, he fasted for 7 days, no food for 7 days. Now, if anybody's ever tried to fast before, or if anybody's had to go multiple days without eating, you know what you usually feel like. You feel like crap. You have no energy whatsoever. It's a really bad feeling. So imagine not eating for 7 days straight, and then doing what he did. And I'm going to tell you what that is when we get back from this break. So stick around. We'll be right back. This is the Power Hour. I'm Kevin Rothberg. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rothberg. The website is letstruck.com. This is Destination Health. Kim Cockerham is with me. So, Kim, after not eating for 7 days, he deadlifted 500 pounds. That's just incredible. So he also holds a record, and I don't remember the number on this one because it's just one of those numbers that's so big it doesn't even, like, stick in your head. But he holds a record for the most total weight squatted in a 24-hour period. And it was some ungodly number, like tens of thousands of pounds. So the way they would score that is if you have 300 pounds and you squat it 10 times, that would be 3,000 pounds in that period of time. So he had 24 hours and he set a record. And he does all of these things being fully keto adapted. So he's got some really good information. He's also part of a team that's researching what they call exogenous ketones. So our body produces ketones. That's what we want to happen when we go into ketosis, because that's what our brain, our heart, our body then uses for energy is ketones instead of glucose. And the idea people have been working on is, okay, the ketones are the energy. So what if we could put ketones into the body? The body isn't producing them. You're going to take them in, ingest them. And he's been working on that idea. And they actually have shown that this is possible. But there's some conflicting information on this. And I'm not all that interested in this. I don't want to go down that road of, you know, more supplements or taking things into the body that aren't really food. I would much rather, if you want to be in ketosis, eat the way that you need to eat to get into ketosis. I think what they're looking at for a lot of these kind of ketone supplements or exogenous ketones is athletes are looking to it as another edge. But I think the average person is better off. Now, the one thing I've talked about is using brain octane instead of coconut oil. But that's not putting the ketone into your body. It's giving your body the fuel it needs to create ketones. And I'd rather see that. But it's interesting that while they're researching this, they're learning a lot more about ketosis. And it's like every week new information comes out about how well this is working to fight all kinds of diseases.
Yeah, and it's I really appreciate all the doctors that are coming on board with this, and it seems like the reading out there is endless if you can go and research it, and it just kind of confirms where we're going, and I'm just grateful that we're kind of coming around full circle here and simplifying things, hopefully. Like you said, we haven't been eating this way for that long, but it's also how long we've had so many issues, and I like getting back to the simplicity of real food.
Yeah, and the idea, the paleo, the hunter-gatherer, the primal, the people who believe in that believe what I talked about earlier, that we lived that way for a long time and we didn't have disease. This goes back to the Dr. Price, Weston A. Price, who, you'll be studying in the NTA now, so you're going to hear a lot about Dr. Price and the idea of, him as a dentist in the early 1900s, seeing people with bad teeth get worse and worse and wondering why. And then he would go study, rural tribes who weren't living a civilized life. And he found out that with no dental care, no fluoride, no flossing, no toothbrushes, none of those things, they had perfect teeth their whole life. They didn't have cavities. See, we've been brought up thinking that if you don't go to the dentist, if you don't floss, if you don't get tooth fillers and all these things, that if you don't get that, your teeth are going to rot and fall out of your head. And in today's world, they will. But that's not normal. That's not natural. I've always kind of believed that, wow, people back then must have lost all their teeth by the time they were 30. That's not true. And why do animals not get tooth decay and lose all their teeth, no matter how old animals get? And then people say, oh, but dogs do. Yeah, because dogs live the same kind of lifestyle we do. We've civilized dogs. Dogs used to be wolves. Don't get cavities. Wolves don't get obese. Wolves don't get diabetes. It's kind of funny. We're in an RV park. We're finally heading home today, by the way.
Nice.
But RV parks are interesting. You meet a lot of new people all the time because people are coming and going and you're always in new parks. And, people tend to live outside a lot in RV parks. So I love the interaction that you get. But I started noticing a trend. And a lot of people in RV parks have dogs. And we're always walking Diesel and you stop and you talk about your dogs. And I've just been noticing how many people will start telling me all the health problems their dogs have. Oh, we just found out she has heart disease, and oh yeah, she has diabetes, now she's blind in this eye, and we talk about that like it's normal. Just like people all talk about all the problems they have, like they're normal. They're not. Animals in the wild don't get these things. So that has to be a huge clue. And for me, like I say, that's kind of what I always look back to. When there seems to be a conflict of information, one group saying this, another group saying this, I always look at it from that point of view. How did we live naturally? And to me, that just seems like a really logical way to approach this. So the trick is, how do we live kind of a wild, natural life in a civilized world? I don't think most of us are going to go back to living in a cave or, go live in a tent but we have to try, I think, to incorporate as many of those natural ways of living into our civilized world.
Sounds fun. I like the idea of, get wild, find
ways.
Yeah,
it's back.
I think our,
go ahead.
No, I just, I think our listeners are all, you know, have one step in that direction just by taking such ownership. And I think it'll be just a, you know, take it a little step further and look for ways to do that. And I think everybody will not only have fun looking for different ways to do that and just get healthier.
All right. And the way you said that just made me think of something. We didn't do a book review this week, but I'm going to do one next week. And I think we should do the book review on the book Go Wild. That was a great one.
Okay. Nice. Good
idea. Somebody needs to remind me because I'll probably forget.
Okay.
So if I forget, that's the book review for next week. Remind me. What do you say we get to some phone calls?
Yeah, that sounds great. Thanks.
All right. Let's go to Illinois to get started. Jonathan, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Kim.
Hi there.
Hey. Okay. I have I am 5'9". 150 pounds, and I have a problem gaining weight. I'm always between 150, 155. I eat just about anything. I used to eat before I started listening to you guys. I used to eat, you know, a lot of cookies, chips, potato chips, but I stopped eating that, and, you know, I'm down to like 150 and dropping even lower. So, you know, I don't eat the junk anymore, but even when I was eating the junk, I wouldn't gain any weight. I mean, I gained a couple of pounds, but I've been 150 like almost since high school.
Yeah. Well, and this
35
is an interesting. This is an interesting phenomenon, and it's not unheard of. It's unusual because most of us obviously look around and most people just keep getting fatter and fatter. But there are people who just don't ever put on weight. There's actually a problem with that. And the problem is that we always seem to keep linking health to weight. And there are clearly correlations, but it's not an absolute. Just because you're not gaining weight doesn't mean you're healthy. There is a phenomenon of people who are like you. They may even consider themselves underweight and they end up diabetic. We always think that, oh, if you're diabetic, it's because you've been eating so much junk for so long and you've probably put on weight. But, and that's pretty true, but there are exceptions. So the first thing, I know you're calling to try to talk about maybe gaining a little more weight, but I'm glad you stopped eating all the junk, even though it wasn't making you fat. It was making you unhealthy. We know that. So this is a good change. Now, give me an idea of a typical day of eating for you right now.
Well, when I'm on the road, I don't hardly eat any breakfast. I might grab a bacon, egg, and cheese in the morning. Not every morning. But if I do grab a bacon, egg, and cheese, it'll last me all the way up until early afternoon. And then I stop at a buffet and grab whatever they have.
Hold that thought. We'll come back and talk about, again, more of what you're eating and get to some answers. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. My co-host is Kim Cockerham. This is Destination Health, and we're talking about Jonathan, and Jonathan's got a little different issue. He'd like to gain a little weight. So, Jonathan, you were up to the point where you got to the buffet. What's the rest of the day look like eating?
Yeah, now I sit down and have a buffet. Whatever they have on a buffet, I eat it. It's rice, it's steak, fish, it doesn't matter. I eat it till I'm full. And then I won't eat nothing the rest of the day. Now, when I used to eat chips and cookies and all that, after I eat a meal, I would eat, you know, all the junk food. And I would go to sleep, right, and, you know, the next day. So what can I eat to, you know, gain a little weight in a healthy way?
Yeah, absolutely. So here's the interesting thing, and I've had this question before. People will say, boy, I hear you talking about this ketogenic diet and people losing all this weight, but I don't want to lose weight. And they start doing it and they do lose weight. My feeling on this is that if you're eating a good, clean diet, and especially a ketogenic diet, and you're losing weight, I wouldn't get too worried about it. I mean, I would let it happen. See where your body kind of stabilizes. And then there are a couple things I can tell you that may help with this. One that I know for sure, if you have the inclination and the time to do it, what I've found, because I went through this as well. I dropped, I'm 5'5", and I was actually about 185 pounds. I look back on pictures now. I didn't think I was fat, but I was. 5'5" is pretty short to be carrying that much weight. And when I did this without trying, I wasn't trying to lose weight. I wasn't, you know, counting calories. I was eating as much as I wanted to eat, but I was eating clean and I was eating high fat. And I dropped all the way down to 139. And I kind of felt like you did, like, my God, this is, you know, I haven't been this light since high school.
Right.
And then I started to kind of adjust my carb count. But I would make them good carbs. I eat more sweet potatoes. I might eat more berries. I might eat a little bit of rice here and there, not a lot. But it's kind of my carb count and exercise that will determine kind of where my weight goes. So the first thing is I wouldn't worry too much about it. This is a healthy thing. They've really shown that the leaner you are, the longer you will live. The thing is, most people don't want to go through what it takes to get that lean. Well, for you, it just seems to be happening naturally. So I wouldn't worry too much about it.
Yeah.
But you might want to try eating more of the starchy carbs. Maybe eat some more sweet potatoes, some more carrots, more berries. Maybe even for you, you might have the metabolism that lets you eat some more fruit. You know, for a lot of people, we tell them you got to watch the fruit. But you're going to have a lot more leeway on carbs. So choose good, healthy, nutrient-dense, starchy carbs, some more fruits, some more berries. If you tolerate dairy well, maybe, you know, add some more full-fat dairy in there. And you also may want to look at upping your protein intake. You know, so the two things we tell everybody to watch out for, you know, certainly the carbs, but we tell people also you got to watch the protein. You could be much more liberal on those. And then if that works, great. If it doesn't, nothing wrong with being really lean. And then if you wanted to gain weight, the one thing that'll do it is resistance training, weightlifting, you know, body weight training, and I would do high intensity, heavy weights. You know, I wouldn't be doing sets of like 12 or 15. I would be doing real high-intensity sets of 4 to 6, you know, things that really fatigue the muscle quickly. And that'll put on some body weight, and that's a really good, healthy body weight. It makes you strong. It's good for your joints. You'll still stay lean, but you can get bigger, you know, and put on some weight. So that's what I would try.
Okay.
Kim, any thoughts on that?
Okay.
No, you know what? I'm just so glad to hear that you are eating healthy. You know, we have a lot of what they call the skinny fat out there and that are so unhealthy, but I got to hand it to you for, you know, even though it's a struggle that you want to gain weight, but you've switched things to eat healthy. So I completely agree, Kevin. I was thinking about the resistance training as well, you know, get lean and play around with some, like you said, some fruit, some good carbs and see how you're feeling.
I noticed when I used to eat chips, cookies, and all the junk, I would have to pull over and take a nap every day about 12, 1 o'clock, but I don't hardly take naps anymore.
Awesome.
That's huge.
That's huge. Awesome.
Yeah.
That's excellent.
All right.
So
thanks a lot, guys.
Great stuff. Keep it up. Yeah, and You know, it. You know, Kim, people would kill to be able to get that lean eating the way he's eating. He's enjoying the eating. He's getting lean anyway. And then if you do go work out weight training, I mean, everybody who goes in the gym and lifts weight, they'd love to have that lean, ripped look, and that's hard to come by. It sounds like he's just got it naturally, so any weight training he does, I mean, you're going to see results quickly.
Yeah, you know, and it goes to show us, you know, you don't judge other people. Like, look at, you know, you might look at him and think, oh, you have no idea what it's like to try to lose weight or, you know, that. But, you
right.
know, like we talk about us all being individuals, and it's just that. Know that we're all, everybody wants to be their healthiest self. They don't want to be too thin, and they don't want to be too heavy. So, you know, just hold the judgment back a little bit, even on those that are trying it from a different route, you know, to find their health.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. My son Michael just sent me a text saying he's just like me. And Michael is that way. He's just,
mm-hmm.
you know, the interesting thing is he led a pretty healthy lifestyle. I mean, I've always cooked at home from scratch the whole time he was growing up. So he got probably more whole home-cooked foods than most people do today. But he also went through those 3 or 4 years of us eating vegetarian. When he was young and eating low fat, and then he wrestled for a lot of years. So you have all the, you know, the weight issues in wrestling, and he was always lean, really lean. Well, he's also a chef, and, you know, he's been working as a chef throughout his 20s, and he was gaining weight too. Not a lot, because he's, you know, he's pretty lean naturally. But over the last year or so, he's been eating ketogenic and paleo, and the weight literally just melted off of him. Now he eats whatever he wants, because what he wants is whole, real food. We're not, when we say mm-hmm. you eat whatever you want, we're not talking about eating junk. We're talking about, as long as your diet is a clean paleo type diet, then you eat as much quantity as you want. So, you know, you don't ever go hungry. You eat as much as you want quantity-wise, as long as it's good, clean food. And he's doing that now, and he's just lean and ripped all the time. And I got thinking about that. Jonathan sounds like he's younger. I think he said he was in his 30s. Michael's just coming up on 30. I think what happens with them is that if they start this way of eating and living earlier, they haven't had 5 decades to do all the damage to their body and their metabolism that I have, you know? So
yeah.
we find that if people do this in their teens or their 20s or their 30s, the results are even faster, and they're really amazing. I like to say that this diet doesn't necessarily make you gain or lose weight. It normalizes your body weight. When you eat this way, I think eventually your body gets to its weight, where it belongs.
Yeah, that's good. That's a nice way to look at it. And just think, all of us with kids out there too, keep that in mind. You know, let's get them started on this. You know, just like Dave Ramsey says, you know, like, change your family tree. You know, we all have that opportunity to
that's
change
right.
our family tree in this way, healthy way. That's even better.
Yeah. Yeah, and you're going to start learning this. We talked about Dr. Weston A. Price, the other doctor that a lot of the NTP or NTA information is based on is Dr. Pottinger. And he was famous for doing a lot of research on cats over multi-generations. And what he was able to show is that the longer you eat unhealthy, and when we say unhealthy, we're really talking primarily about processed foods. The longer you eat processed foods, the more it carries over over generations. And so the second generation would be less healthy, and then the third generation on that kind of food would be less healthy. And we're seeing that. I mean, that's what we're seeing now, because, you know, if we were to go back, say, 80 years ago, and we took a 4 or 5 year old child and we started feeding them an unhealthy diet, they would start to show signs of that. But it would take a long time, might even take decades. But what we're seeing today is we're seeing babies are being born unhealthy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's obviously not their fault. That's not their diet and lifestyle. This is how we're starting them out in life, because this does carry over to our children. Now, the interesting thing was he also proved the opposite, and we'll talk about that right after this break. Stick around. Kevin Rutherford. All right, we're heading into segment four. Looks like we do have some questions, quite a few left, so we're going to do a second hour. If you want to get in that second hour, it looks like there's some time. Go ahead and press one on your phone right now. We should be able to get to you. Here we go. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is Destination Health. Kim is here with me. And so here's the good news. That sounds kind of scary that, you know, our health today is based on our parents and our grandparents, and we can't change that. But the good news is, as soon as you and I start eating healthy, obviously we see the results in our own life. That's going to help the next generation. And then if that generation starts off life healthier, you know, I think our family is kind of a good example of this. I grew up with a horrible diet. I mean, you and I grew up in Ohio, and it was that typical Midwestern, you know, you're not near fresh seafood, so you're really not eating a lot of seafood for most people. Canned vegetables were the thing. We grew up in the 60s. And a lot of junk and processed food. And you know, we're kind of that generation. You know, it was the 50s and 60s after World War II that our food really started to move to being industrialized and heavily processed. So that's our generation, you and I. So that's what I grew up with. Now, for whatever reason, you know, even into my teens, I started getting interested in cooking. I liked to cook. So I had a little bit of an advantage starting then, because without even really knowing it, I just started eating more whole real food. Because when you cook, you tend to, you know, use more ingredients that are in their natural state and then cook. So I started, you know, solving some of my childhood health problems as I became an adult and started cooking a lot more. And my son, Michael, when he was born, I was cooking a lot. So he did have the benefit of eating probably a better diet than most people his age. So that's almost like starting to change that family tree. And now he has twin boys that have been eating this way from day one, and their mother was eating this way when she was pregnant, and Michael's eating this way. So I mean, you can see how that will start to change. You know, I can't imagine if they stick to this, how healthy they're going to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's pretty awesome to see.
Yeah. All right, let's get to some phone calls. Let's go to New Hampshire. JW, welcome to the program.
Well, hello, Kevin and Kim. Good day to you.
Hi, JW. Hi, JW.
Hey there.
Following up on my question, we ran out of time the other day, but did you get my my chart that I got sent over there? Paperwork?
That is an awesome chart, JW.
Well, I've been working here in the bunker here at the Penny Stacker Labs, and well, I've got one bloody finger left, if you know what I'm talking about, Kevin. But point out one of the things that I've learned myself from doing this. It's how important it is to keep a log and document this stuff to, you can review and go back and you figure out a lot of this stuff on your own. One of the things I've already made an adjustment on is you'll notice every time I've taken my beet juice powder, there would be a spike in my blood glucose. And so to adjust that, I normally have what's known as the dawn effect every morning. So, well, my blood sugar is going to be high every morning. I'll just take my beet juice powder then. And as you can see on the last entry, it solved my, you know, my blood sugar problem. It's like, okay, first test in the morning is going to be high because of, well, you know, the beet powder. There's only 5 grams of sugar in that, but it sure runs it up. But then, you know, my next one after that is down normal. So that's something that I've learned. Question is, you'll notice up in the chart, 2 times I've hit 4.6 on the on the ketones, and that was 2 readings back to back in the middle. Well, about the middle of the day, it looks like. Mm-hmm. And the only time, this is a correlation that I'm picking up, the only time that I ever got excellent numbers like that is when my glucose was below 100. One of them being 90 and the other an 87. Well, how do I keep my glucose in that range, 90 and below, on a regular basis throughout the day? I'm trying to figure out what the heck's wrong with me.
Nothing's wrong with you. And let's talk about the good news first. Most of the research shows that there really isn't any damage to our body, and any diabetic type damage to our body, as long as we keep our blood glucose under 140. So there's some evidence that shows you could stay in the 130s all day long, and it's probably never going to cause any harm. It's when we start keeping our blood glucose elevated above 140, and the longer it stays up there, the more damage is going to be done. Now, you're in kind of the same boat as the rest of us. We did damage to our metabolism for decades, and now we have to try to fix it. And it happens over time. So the fact that you're keeping your blood sugar nice and low is a really good thing for your overall health. But I get it. You want to stay in ketosis because it feels good. And if your blood sugar is in that, you know, 110, 120 range, it's hard for your body to produce ketones because it's saying, look, we don't really need them. We have glucose in the blood. Glucose is energy. If we need it, it's there. So you might want to try a couple things. Exercise is good for blood sugar control. So you may want to look at some more exercise.
Have you seen my chart? Have you looked at my chart? 8-mile walk. What else do you want me to do?
Well, here's what I want you to do. That's a good point. And I wouldn't want you to stop doing the 8-mile walks. Those are healthy. But what you might want to try is 20 minutes of super high intensity, like 30-second blast, whether it's running, weightlifting, jump rope, whatever. Find something you enjoy and do what they call high intensity interval training, where you go full out for only like 30 seconds, though. And then you walk or slow down the pace for 2 minutes till you get your breath back, and then you do it again, and you cycle like that, and you only have to do it for like 15 or 20 minutes. This isn't, you know, working out for hours. And that tends to have a bigger impact on blood sugar than longer endurance kind of stuff. And then it's always good to mix it up, too. Keep your body guessing, you know, and keep it off balance so it doesn't get used to a certain type of exercise. The other thing is I would look at foods that have been shown to help blood sugar control. Apple cider vinegar, raw apple cider vinegar is, you know, supposed to be good for blood sugar control. And you can look up a list of foods. There are a bunch of them. Some of them are just spices. Some of them are foods. Some of them are foods that are heavy in certain minerals. And I think the longer you stay on this ketogenic diet, incorporate some of the high intensity training and make some of those foods that are good at blood sugar control a daily part of your diet, I think you're just going to continue to see that blood sugar get better and better.
I'd really like to see it below, 90 or below on a regular basis is kind of like my goal. But at the same time, if I didn't have this chart in front of me, I wouldn't even know that I was, 2.4 on ketones or, my blood sugar was 120.
Right.
It's like, I feel great. I keep trying to adjust things.
Yeah, and I it sounds to me like you're doing a lot right. I mean, I don't think you're going to have to make any major changes. I think we're just talking about a couple little tweaks and then just time. I think it will get better over time. But even when, even if your blood glucose is at 120 and you're producing 2.4 on ketones, that you're in ketosis. I mean, that's natural nutritional ketosis, which is excellent. I think you just keep doing what you're doing, and it's just going to continue to get better.
So quit stewing about it, and just do what I'm doing, and wait and come back and review it.
There you go.
And again at a later time.
It's
a lot of work
because we love to see those numbers. No, you're right. It is a lot of work, and I don't try to push people to track numbers the way you are, but it is a really good thing to do. Kim, isn't it? You just sent me a chart also that I thought was pretty interesting. I like numbers. I like seeing results like this. So, there's the music. We didn't get to all the questions, so we'll have to do this again. Any final words?
Yeah, you know what? It's just really apparent, our group here, and, we have the listeners, the Facebook group, and I just want to thank everybody for, everybody always supports each other and lifts each other up and, has real positive discussion, and we just appreciate you guys. You support our mission, and, sky's the limit for where we're all going to go.
There you go. Great stuff. All right, we've got to get out of here. We will do it again. In the meantime, be safe, be profitable, be fit and healthy. Always do the hard work and master the journey. Kevin Rutherford.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs,
back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. This is Destination Health. My co-host is Kim Cockerham, and we're here to take your calls and answer your questions about everything health. We've been lied to, and it's killing us. Kim and I are here to help you break through to the truth and reach your health destiny. I'm a nutritional therapy practitioner. Kim is a nutritional therapy consultant in training and an Ironman triathlete. We believe that the key to a long, healthy, vibrant life starts with a properly prepared, nutrient-dense whole food diet. We'll take your calls and answer your questions about food, nutrition, weight loss, disease, training, prescription drugs, and so much more. And of course, we'll wrap it around that trucking lifestyle. So, Kim, welcome back. My favorite hour of the week.
Mine too. Glad to be here.
Yeah. So I don't have a book review today. We've been... We're still on the road, and we met up with Aaron, and Lisa and I and Aaron have just been hammering out a lot of plans where we're going with the company. We're getting closer. There's a little teaser. We're getting very, very close to announcing the 2017 CMC. Not quite there yet, but we're getting close. Maybe even by the time people hear this show, we will have an announcement. So we are getting that close. So I don't have a book review. I didn't have time to put one together right now. But there's a couple things I'd like to talk about, and then we'll get to calls because we never seem to be able to get to all of our calls that we have. You sent me an interesting chart, and I don't know who this is. You said it was a woman, a doctor, and she's a pro Ironman. And her chart shows her macronutrient balance before and now, and it is like, in the way they did it with the colors, it's just the absolute inversion of the way she used to eat. She was obviously, like you, you've trained and you've completed an Ironman and you've done lots of endurance sports. You know, it was the goos, the gels, the drinks that are loaded in sugars, and everybody carb loads, the tons of pasta and rice and potatoes and, you know, days before the event and then throughout the event, they're just loading their body with sugar. And in some ways that had to happen. And what I mean by that is, you know, endurance kind of training or events are pretty new. I mean, marathons have been around a long time, but you know, the idea of going out and doing things like an Ironman, that's pretty new. One of the things I thought was funny, I follow Dr. Mercola a lot, and Dr. Mercola was a runner really, really early on. Like, I'm thinking it was in like the 60s, he started running. And it was funny, he said, there were times when he would be running through a neighborhood and people would chase him because nobody ran. They thought he was like running away from something, like he just, you know, mugged somebody and he was running. Nobody understood why he would just be running through their neighborhood.
That's funny.
And that wasn't that long. Yeah, that wasn't that long ago. So again, in the last episode, we talked about, you know, how our modern diet is really just a blink in evolutionary time. Running, or this idea of exercise, these long endurance type of exercises, is pretty darn new. And it happened at a time when we were starting to eat this low fat, high carbohydrate diet. And if you eat low fat and high carbohydrate, you have to burn sugar for energy. That's your only choice. And if you try to run a long distance or do something like an Ironman, your body will burn through its stores of glycogen, which is how we store sugar. Your body will burn through that pretty quickly, and you kind of hit the wall. You're done unless you can keep getting sugar into your body. So why don't you talk about that for a second, like what that's like when you were training or, you know, when you were actually running one of these events. I mean, what did it look like, the way you were eating and the stuff you were drinking and...
Yeah, it was very planned out because they say when you do an Ironman, it's actually like four disciplines, you know, swim, bike, run, nutrition. So, you practice nutrition as much as you did, you know, everything else. And so, yeah, I had it down. I had, you know, unpacked and planned and, on the bike, I actually used a liquid, called Perpetuum. It was a Hammer product, that had protein and some fat in it as well. I used to use like the gummy chews too on the bike, but the run was completely planned. How many goos I needed, Gatorade. Actually, the Ironman on their course, they use at the one I did. They used, I don't think they used Gatorade. They used Powerade, and so you know, and that's just that infiltration of this, you know, these drinks that are just high fructose. It's just. You know, Tim Noakes talks about that in his book and stuff, and it's absolutely fascinating, but also infuriating too, that this is such a marketing thing and it's there. And so you are exactly right. This whole running thing built the same time we started doing, you know, all the high carb stuff. And then, you know, then Gatorade comes in and, you know, created this drink that now, you know, runners, and I used to feel that way. There is no way I could go out on a run without having that. And, You know, and it's just, it's incredible, and you, it's a crutch. And so, yeah, you hit, you go without some of that one time, and you never want to feel that again. And so, you know, it just keeps going, and it's a little scary to me. I'm hoping, you know, it'd be nice to see, I'm hoping that whole thing will come full circle. I think we just need to, you know, even in the athletic community, you know, share the information, and you know, hopefully we can make some changes out there as well. But yeah, it was very, very plain. Of that chart I showed you, that Ironman, it's actually, her name's Dr. Amanda Stevens, and Dr. Phil Massatoon worked with her because she was so getting injured. She was getting, you know, having to take naps. She wasn't recovering. She was getting sick, and I got to hand it to her as a pro triathlete, you know, saying I need help and willing to do whatever. And, you know, with the shift in her macronutrients with that, she was able, like, her heart rate stayed the same. Training wise, she was able to go from 30 hours of training a week down to 18. And she slowly built up to 24 before a race. I know. Isn't it incredible?
Yeah.
And she could go on a 4-mile bike ride, and these pros don't do bike rides like we do. I mean, they're pushing the wattage, and they're going 25, 26 miles an hour, 4 hours without any nutrition. Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah, I get goosebumps. That's just, so, yeah, it's very cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. And to look at her chart here, there's a really interesting thing going on here. So pre-2015, when she was eating the way most endurance athletes are eating, she was consuming 475 grams of carbs a day.
Mm-hmm.
That
mm-hmm.
is an incredible amount of carbohydrates. And she was eating 85 grams of protein and 40 grams of fat. Now, 40 grams of fat is a really, really low-fat diet. I mean, you look at the grams of fat in certain things, and you get to 40 grams in a heartbeat. You have to work hard to stay that low on fat. And obviously, it mm-hmm. wasn't working for her. And you hear this a lot from endurance athletes. You hear this a lot because you're around these people. You talk about it. You've lived through it. It seems like the longer they go, the worse their problems all become. They all start mm-hmm. fighting injury issues and recovery mm-hmm. issues. And then they start to notice other health issues. And it's pretty incredible, but then they make this change, and she went from 475 grams of carbs to 12. Now, I mm-hmm. said it's hard to stay at 40 grams of fat because it's so low. It's pretty darn hard to stay at 12 grams of carbs. That's really, really low. Like,
yeah,
she's not even eating hardly any vegetables. You can't, not at 12 grams of carbs. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, a salad will get you 12 grams of carbs most of the time. So she's eating really, really low carb. Her protein didn't change at all. She stayed right at 85 grams of protein both ways. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But she went to 217 grams of fat. That is, this is just an incredible chart. And then to see, you know, you just talked about reduced training time, increased energy. She doesn't need the calories during the race. And it sounds like her health is getting better too.
Yeah. Very fascinating.
Great stuff. Let's get to the break. I have one more thing I want to talk about with you, and then we'll get to some phone calls. Stick around. We'll be right back with more stuff. Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is Destination Health. Kim is here with me. We're going to get to your calls here in just a couple minutes. Kim, we've talked in the past about the different ways of measuring ketones in our body to know, are we in ketosis? How deep are we into ketosis? And I think you've got a question about that, don't you?
I do, because I was looking at JW's chart, you know, and I know Jimmy Moore's done this too, like compare, and I think you've done it as well, with the blood ketones versus the reading on the ketonics. And I was trying to understand by his chart, like the correlation and how accurate the ketonics is. I love the blood ketone meter. If those Dagon strips were not so expensive, it's just insane. And the ketonics just seems so much more reasonable if you want to do this as a lifestyle. So what does this chart look like to you, and what is, in your experience, how accurate the ketonics is?
Okay, so this is a really good question, and I hope I can explain this correctly. What I think I found is that there's no measurable correlation. And I wish I could think of an analogy that might help this make sense. I'm going to have to work on that. So here's the thing. When we are in ketosis, our body actually produces three different chemicals or substances, whatever we want to call them. Beta-hydroxybutyrate is one. Acetate is another. And then the third, I can't remember. So the three different ways that we can measure for ketones are all looking for a different substance. The urine strips, which are the most common and the cheapest, and those measure actually a byproduct of ketones. So what most people have found is they're okay to know when you first go into ketosis. So the way this works is literally you can put anybody into ketosis in about 24 hours. That's all it takes. I don't care if your diet's been horrible your whole life. I don't care if you ate 800 grams of carbs yesterday. All you have to do is fast for about 24 to 36 hours. And that would depend on how much activity you have, because all we need to do to put our body into ketosis is to deplete the 2,000 calories of glycogen that our body stores all the time. It can't store glucose as glycogen once you fill up that 2,000 calories or so. After that, if you're still consuming glucose, your body has to convert it to fat as fat, and that's why we keep gaining weight. But in order to deplete that 2,000 calories, all we have to do is stop eating, so we're not going to take in any carbohydrates. And after about 24 to 36 hours, the glycogen is gone, and your body has to look somewhere for energy, or you would die. I mean, your brain needs the energy, your heart has to have the energy. So by fasting for 24 to 36 hours, your body will start producing ketones. The issue, though, is your body doesn't know how to use them very well yet. And this is also why people have the keto flu symptoms we talk about. They have no energy, they get a headache, you just don't feel good because your glycogen is gone. The glucose is all gone. You don't have that for energy. Your body's producing ketones, but it doesn't know how to use them yet. So there's being in ketosis, but then the next step that we really want to get to is what's referred to as being keto adapted. Now our body knows how to use the ketones. That's when people start saying, oh my God, I feel great. I have energy. I'm not hungry. So that's the kind of that transition period. Well, during the transition period, the urine strips will work because they're measuring the ketones that your body produced, but it doesn't know how to use them. So you eliminate them and then we can measure them. But once your body becomes keto adapted, then you don't excrete many of the ketones because your body wants them. It uses them as energy. So that's why I'm not a big fan of the urine sticks. They're okay in the beginning. Now we can look at, okay, do we want to measure acetone in our breath or beta-hydroxybutyrate in our blood? they occur at different times for different reasons. And there's still a lot of research going on about this, but for the most part, nobody has been able to come up with a really good correlation. So I look at it as, here's really kind of a way to think about this. If I tell you, I want you to build a house and I want you to use the metric system, and I'm going to build a house and I'm going to use inches and feet and yards and that kind of thing, we could still end up building the exact same house. But you're going to look over and go, hey, wait a minute, what do you mean 37? I have 18. They're both numbers, but we're measuring things in a different way. And that's kind of what this is, that there doesn't seem to be anything we found yet that helps correlate one to the other. But both of them work just fine. I mean, I still do both, but I only do the blood once in a while. I mean, I use my ketonic sometimes 20 times a day, just goofing around to see what it does. It's so easy. All I have to do is grab it and blow in it. It doesn't cost me anything. It's easy. So I have found that the correlation is that I know whether I'm using blood or the ketonics. I know when I'm in ketosis and I know at what level I'm in ketosis. So I really think the ketonics, in fact, we're going to talk about seeing if we can possibly get it in our store.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
I like the ketonics a lot. Yeah, it really does work well, and it's very accurate. Yeah.
Okay, that's good to know.
All right, so what do you say we get to some phone calls?
Yeah, it'd be great.
Let's go to California. Keith, welcome to the program.
Oh, hi, Kim. Hey, hi. I got a question. About 5 years ago, they said that I had a hypothyroidism. I had extremely high cholesterol. They started giving me like five different medications. I'd taken prostate medicine, thyroid medicine, statin medicine, antidepressant. Anyway, basically, after I read the Wheat Belly book, I decided that I didn't want to do that anymore. I quit taking all those pills, with the exception of the thyroid pill. And I'm not sure whether I can continue, if I have to continue taking that, or if there's something I can do that would allow me to not take that pill.
So I just want to be clear, you had hypothyroidism, right? Low thyroid function, not hyperthyroidism.
Right. Basically inactive thyroid, yes.
Okay, and it was just plain old hypothyroidism. It wasn't Hashimoto's or anything like that.
Correct.
Okay. So one of the things we know is that the traditional medical community seems to be using all the wrong markers of how to measure good thyroid function. So they tend to get it wrong both ways, whether it's hypo or hyper. This is one of those things, though, that I wouldn't even attempt to direct you over the phone, because this is one of those areas where it's the measurements that are going to tell us what we need. I would highly recommend, and there are NTPs that specialize in this that are really good at thyroid issues, but we have to have more information. So I would really recommend that you find an NTP and make that your number one priority. You know, you can, because that's one of the things we do as an NTP. We ask you, what are your priorities? What do you want us to help you with? And you've gotten a lot of things under control, by the way. Congratulations on getting off all those medications. How do you feel?
Getting better. Definitely getting better. More clear-headed. And I'm eating a lot less, that's for sure.
Good. You're heading in the right direction. But the thyroid issue is one of those that I don't like to just guess at. I don't like to just, I mean, I could recommend some supplements and some other things, and it might work. But this is one that I don't like to guess at. It's much better if we get the readings, and you're probably going to have some blood work done for this. But we get the readings, and then we target your specific thyroid issue. And who knows? you know, you may not have a thyroid issue, but if you do,
right, so they're not very forthcoming. I'm sorry, they're not very forthcoming with what the problem actually is. They just here, take this pill, you know.
That's pretty typical. Yeah, I know. So it, I would say one of two things. So when you were first diagnosed, let's do it this way. When you were first diagnosed, what were the symptoms, or did they just find it through some other screening?
They just found it through some other screening, and I was surprised because they said, we're surprised that you're you know, as healthy as you seem to be, that you should be almost dying with this condition and with the high blood or the high cholesterol. And
yeah.
That's what I thought was fine. I didn't even think it was a problem.
Well, that's, I want to talk about that when we come back. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is Destination Health. Kim is here with me, and we are talking with Keith in California. So, Keith, I think this is kind of interesting because most of the time, thyroid dysfunction will result in symptoms, and usually a lot of symptoms. Cold hands, cold feet, trouble sleeping, you know, lack of concentration, all kinds of things. And if you aren't feeling those and they just found this on a random screening, my guess is you may not have a thyroid problem at all. But I would go to an NTP and I would do the screening work to find out. And if you do, there are some pretty good supplements that can help this. There's some dietary changes that you can make. I think... for the fun of it, I would go find an NTP and I would check this.
Okay, Kevin, thank you guys very much. Have a great day and thanks for the show.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. So, Kim, you know, I've talked before about how I'm against most medical screenings. By a screening, I mean looking for a disease when there are no symptoms present. And one of the most common types of screening we do this for is cancer. We go looking for cancer because our thought process has always been the earlier you find it, the better chance we have of treating it. But after a couple decades of this, we really found out that those screenings do more harm than good. And we'll probably do another whole show about that sometime, but there's a ton of evidence. So I'm not a big fan. In fact, that's an understatement. I will not do any kind of medical screening. If I don't have a symptom, they're not going and looking for something. But there are a couple exceptions to things. The good news is the things that are exceptions, we can kind of check on our own. Blood pressure. Blood pressure is known as the silent killer because there are never really any symptoms. There are actually a couple. Most people don't recognize them. On the NTP exam, there are a couple symptoms we ask about that would indicate high blood pressure. But for the most part, most people don't know they have it. There isn't any major symptoms. So I believe blood pressure is one of those things that you should watch. But you can buy a $30 automatic blood pressure cuff and just do it yourself at home once in a while. Other thing I think we should watch, and again, we can do it on our own, I think we should watch our blood sugar, because people can go decades and have high blood sugar the whole time and never know it, but they're doing damage that whole time, and then all of the damage starts to become obvious. So I don't look at those as screenings per se. We're not looking for a disease where it doesn't exist. We're monitoring you know, biomarkers in our body that would tell us whether or not we're healthy.
Yeah, yeah, that's really, I wonder how many people do, you know, I know blood sugar is a lot that we have people do that, but blood pressure is one I never think of until, you know, you go to the doctor or, you know, in the store with that self, you know, that test, but yeah, it's not
right.
one
right.
that I think of.
Yeah, so, you know me, every time I have an idea, I throw it out there. I don't know. That this isn't a project that's in the works, but it's one I've thought of. So let's just say that. So it has no timeline on it. I have no idea when we might work on it, if ever, but it's something I've thought of. We learn so much from other people's numbers. You know, when we look at the business side of our business, we on the air, we do oil sample results. Those are numbers. We're measuring the health of the engine through an oil sample, and we share those on the air, and everybody learns from that. And then we developed fuel gauges, and we let everybody see everybody's numbers, if you choose that that's how you want to do it, because we all learn from those things. We do the same thing with profit and loss statements. People call on the air, and I help them understand their profit and loss statement. Everybody learns from that. And you know, we just had on our last show, we had JW, who's been checking his blood glucose, his blood ketones, and he shared his chart with us. And don't you find those things interesting? Don't you learn from other people's results? That, yeah. So my idea, we have fuel gauges to track fuel mileage. We have profit gauges to track profit. I'm working on this idea of health gauges where you know, people who want to and are willing to, share their health results. You know, so we can start to see the correlation between blood glucose and blood ketones and eating a, you know, ketogenic diet and what starts to happen to people's cholesterol and blood pressure numbers and blood sugar. And I think that would be, you know, incredible that we could all share those results that way.
Yeah, and where else can we do that? You know, like in this community that we have here, how cool would that be?
Yeah.
Is Aaron listening?
So,
love hearing you. Are they listening?
Well, the last couple nights, Aaron and I have been up the other night. We were up till 2 a.m. We were, you know, solving the world's problems and planning. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Aaron and I, if we get together, the whole big picture thing. So, yeah, Aaron knows this is on my radar, and he likes the idea. But again, not on a timeline yet, but definitely something I like the idea. Let's get to some more phone calls. Let's go to Indiana. Scott, welcome to the program.
Hello, guys. I got a question about kombucha. I bought some the other day, and I've taken a shot, and it makes me feel drunk. Is that normal?
No, that's kind of interesting. Now, all kombucha has trace amounts of alcohol, but we're talking really trace amounts, along the same lines as the non-alcoholic beers. So even though they call them non-alcoholic, there is a trace of alcohol left. And it's about the same amount as what you see in those kind of beers. And it shouldn't be enough ever make you feel intoxicated. I mean, even if you were to drink 10 kombuchas, by the time you can drink them and process them, your body also gets rid of alcohol, you know, so you can't drink enough fast enough to get enough alcohol in your body to feel it. Do you drink any alcohol anytime?
Yeah, probably twice a month.
Twice a month. Okay. And I mean, do you notice that you get like overly intoxicated on a small amount of alcohol?
Only if I haven't eaten.
Yeah, which is normal. Yeah, and that's normal. So that's kind of not what I was looking. The reason I ask, there are people who can get extremely intoxicated on a very small amount of alcohol. And believe it or not, and I know that's, this isn't what we're talking about here at all, but that phenomenon can happen to chronic alcoholics, people who have been able to drink huge amounts of alcohol their whole life, and handle it pretty well. There comes a time when all of a sudden they get incredibly intoxicated off a very small amount. And that's a bad, bad sign, because what it means is their liver is about done. It's about shut down, and it can't process any of the alcohol anymore. So it means the alcohol just stays in the bloodstream. I know that's not what we're dealing with here, but I started thinking of maybe we have some sort of compromised liver function. Now, is this like, does it last, or is it just kind of fleeting? Like, you know, I kind of feel a little tipsy, and then a couple minutes later, it's gone.
It's, I'm pretty, and I've only taken like, I don't know, a mouthful. I haven't had a whole bottle at once. It comes on pretty strong for about 5 minutes and then goes away, I don't know, 15 minutes later, I feel back to normal.
Interesting. Huh. Now, just to be sure, I know this would be bizarre, but there are a couple brands of kombucha on the market that are actually brewed to be alcoholic. You didn't buy one that actually has some sort of alcohol content, like 5 or 6%, did you?
No, I didn't say anything about alcohol on the...
Okay, and they would have to be clearly stated on there. Yeah, I just wanted to make sure. I would experiment with this. I would try it again, see if it happens again. And then if it did, I would experiment with trying it on a full stomach and see if it happens. And I've got a couple more things I want to say about that. So let me get to a break and we'll come back and we'll talk a little bit more about this. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rothman. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're down to the final segment. Kim's here with me. I'm going to get right back to the calls. We were talking with Scott in Indiana. So, Scott, I would experiment a little bit with this. It might have just been a fluke. Try it with a full stomach and see if it happens. The thing about alcohol is it can be absorbed directly through our stomach. So it doesn't have to be processed. And if you, and that's why when you drink on an empty stomach, you get intoxicated so much faster, because there's no food there, and it literally just gets absorbed right into your bloodstream. So I would play around with it a little bit. I wouldn't get too worried about this right now. If it continues to be a trend, that would be an indication that, and I would look a little deeper. And two things I would do. I would either do a full NTP workup, because we do look pretty closely at liver function, or I would go in and do a liver panel, and that's a blood test. So they draw blood specifically to check liver enzymes and some other things. So I would experiment with this a little bit. And if you keep finding that result, that would indicate to me something's going wrong. But I think we'd be able to track it down pretty quick. So let's see, where are we going to go here? We are off to Texas. Justin, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Actually, a thought on that last caller. I had something very similar to me happening when I started trying these probiotics here very recently, having never done any before and obviously having very poor gut health. I kind of chalked it up to good bacteria versus bad bacteria. I only had a little bit of it, and I just kind of assumed it was, you know, the bad bacteria dying, because I got kind of a really weird feeling, almost like I, like you said, had taken a shot of liquor and not kombucha or fermented vegetables or something like that. But I have noticed here, continuing on this trend, I'm doing all three, fermented vegetables, probiotics, and kombucha, and I do not get that anywhere near as bad anymore in much higher amounts. So that's just a thought.
And you bring up a thought I want to talk about, because that's an interesting topic, and we should talk about this once in a while. I didn't think that was the case here, because he said he had a mouthful. I can't imagine that there's any way what I'm about to describe could happen from that. But if we have a lot of bad gut bacteria, and a lot of people do, and then we start heavy into really, you know, trying to supplement with probiotics and fermented vegetables, and we have to be careful, because if we kill, and the good gut bacteria will go down, and it's not like the good gut bacteria attack the bad ones and kill them. It's they start to eat the food sources available, and they start to overcome. And if the bad bacteria dies off en masse, there are symptoms that could happen. It's almost like all that bad dead bacteria is toxic to our body. And you can suffer some fairly uncomfortable symptoms. It's not all that common, but it's something to be aware of. And it sounds like that is what you went through. And maybe it can happen on a little bit. I don't know. It's interesting, this whole bacteria thing. We're still learning this stuff every day.
Fair enough. I actually had two questions, and I know we're running out of time, so a comment question if there is time. But the two quick ones, your thoughts on structured water versus regular, you know, obviously non-chlorinated, non-fluoridated water, and also your thoughts on vitamin D3 liquid versus capsule.
Okay. The first one, I'm probably not going to have a very satisfactory answer for you. I've researched it a lot. I know Dr. Mercola talks about structured water. I don't get it. I'm not saying it doesn't work. I haven't seen the proof yet that would make me want to run out and, you know, switch. And I've read everything I can read, and I'm just not getting it. And there doesn't seem to be any real strong research yet. Not enough for me anyway, but it's something I'm going to keep an eye on. I'm certainly not ruling it out. There could be something there. I just don't see it yet. The D3 versus the capsule, I have really good information on this because I did the testing on myself. I was taking some really good quality D3 supplements, capsules, and then I switched to the liquid. And with the liquid, I'm able to maintain the vitamin D levels more consistently. Now, I haven't done a ton of testing because you have to blood test, and, you know, you can't do that a lot. But now, and this is something I'm excited about, we're working with a company that makes mineral test kits that you can do yourself. And now they're releasing vitamin test kits that you actually just smell something. And based on the way it smells to you, can actually give us an indication of vitamin D levels. We can also do it for vitamin A. I'm hoping when I get home today, they were supposed to send me a lot of these test kits so I can start playing around with them. So I may be able to let you know here in the next couple of weeks how you would be able to test, you know, the liquid against the capsules yourself. You know, take the liquid for a week and do the smell test, and then, you know, switch over and maybe skip a week and then start the capsule and then try that. Those are the kind of things I'm going to be doing, so I'll let you know how that goes.
Interesting. Okay. I don't want to hug your time. You got time for the comment question?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. I bought one of these ketonic sticks, and you kind of answered my question a second ago, but basically I will, like you said, for the sake of science, I'll do probably 4 ounces of gin each evening. I am noticing, and that's the reason I got the ketonic stick. I was expecting that to be knocking me out every, the next day, every day. I'm reading 6 or 7 red flashes into ketosis the next morning.
Wow.
And throughout the day, it seems to be quite stable. I wasn't sure if you were seeing the same results, if maybe the blood test was different after you had alcohol, but the ketonic stick was still showing really high. And I made sure the thing was calibrated, read that complicated manual and all that.
I have experience, and this is one of those where 10 core of a ketonic blood mean is, if I drink 2 glasses of wine at night, the next morning, whether I test with the blood meter or the ketonics, I am out of ketosis on both of them. So they both correlate in the morning.
Huh.
And if I don't drink any alcohol the night before, then I show good ketone levels on both of them. Or if I get up in the morning and I'm out of ketosis and I drink a cup or two of Bulletproof coffee with brain octane in it, then both of them show my ketones going right back up. But the fact that you're showing,
right,
and you're showing a very high level of ketosis, that's just a good sign.
Right, almost at the top of the scale.
That's excellent. That's just saying, look, your body can handle and process that amount of alcohol without affecting your ketosis at all.
Kevin, could it be the difference between wine and the hard alcohol?
Possible. It really is. And this is still stuff we're learning. I don't know that yet, but I'll tell you the reason I think that it puts you out of ketosis. There's not enough carbs in there to do it. You know, I'm not slamming down 8 beers, loaded with carbs. I'm drinking 2 glasses of wine, and it's well within my carb count for the day. But, we talk about the body having 2 sources of energy, glucose and ketones. That's not the whole truth. There is another substance we can use for energy directly. Guess what it is?
A test. I don't know.
Alcohol.
Alcohol
itself, the substance, the alcohol itself, your body can burn alcohol as energy. So my thought is, and again, there's just not a lot of research on this, but my thought is the reason we go into ketosis is because the body needs energy and we've starved it of one of its energy source. We've starved it of glucose, doesn't have it to use for energy anymore, so it makes ketones. Well, if alcohol is also an energy source and we drink alcohol and our body says, hey, look, we don't need to make any ketones. We've got energy right here.
Right. It will do that first. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But the first time I did ketosis in 2007, I was allowed to have hard alcohol, no wine.
Interesting. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. I guess I might have to do another experiment in the interest of science.
There we go.
Start drinking really good scotch at night.
There you go.
Let's go to California. Will, welcome to the program. Oh, sorry, Will.
That's...
I wasn't paying attention. There's the music. Kim, any final parting thoughts you'd like to share?
Just have people email us for any support they need. We're here for you.
Fantastic. support@letstruck.com. Be healthy and share with us, and we'll see you back here next time, and we'll update you on everything that's going on. So in the meantime, thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time. Great calls and questions and comments today. Be safe, be profitable, be fit and healthy. Always do the hard work and master the journey. I'm Kevin Rutherford. All right, everybody, thanks, and we'll see you this weekend for the live show.